From beyond the Beltway, this is Bruce Dumont with our weekly analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by conservative commentator Bruno Barron, Democrat businessman Patrick Hanley, Republican talk show host Stephanie Trussell, and in our second hour, Tom Bevan, who is the founder and the editor of RealClearPolitics.com. In the second hour tonight, we're going to talk all about the latest polls, not only in the presidential races, in the battleground states, the key battleground states that are out there, but also we're going to be looking at another big political issue this year is what's going to happen to the future of Congress and the Senate, and we're going to look at some of the key U.S. Senate races all over the United States to see if the Republicans will gain control of the United States Senate. Our program tonight coming to you from AM 560. That's the Salem radio station in Elk Grove Village, just outside Chicago. Nice to have you with us this evening. Phone lines open 1-800-723-8289. Last night, the House Republicans, they joined with Democrats in passing a $95 billion foreign aid package. That package includes $60.8 billion to Ukraine, $26.3 billion to Israel, $8.1 billion to Indo-Pacific, and also TikTok will be banned if it is not sold from its Chinese owner ByteDance. And that's one of the perhaps big stories, at least that we will get into this evening, because people have been talking about that for quite some time. The House moved on it. There's already been talk about, you know, whether it'll make it through the Senate or not. But again, big stories this evening. And Stephanie, I'm going to begin with you, because this big bill passed, but there were Republicans, not too many of them, but there were Republicans who voted against it. And a lot of Republicans, a number of Republicans, want to kick Mike Johnson out of the Speaker's job, because he came up with this big package. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm not a happy woman about the package at all. I don't think he should lose his job. We don't need to go through that process that we went through before trying to pick him. But my question is, as an American, where is our border bill? I get it. I understand that there are allies and we have to help them. But my question is, how much money are we going to give them and for how long? I mean, no offense, that's the equivalent of me donating 80% of my salary to an effort in Chicago to help with gang violence, but I'm going to lose my house, I'm going to be put out on the street, I'm going to go hungry because I can't take care of home first. I should care more about the Ukrainian border than I care about the American border. That's just unrealistic.
Bruno Barron, your response, you're a conservative commentator. We don't quite know where you come from.
On this issue,
other
or
than Lake Forest,
by way of Elmhurst, yes. So here's where I stand on this issue. I think there should be all kinds of investigations and discussions as to what really is going on with Ukraine, going all the way back to Trump trying to get Biden in trouble, Biden bragging about how he got somebody fired when that person shouldn't have been fired, and then impeaching Trump for doing the exact same thing, or theoretically doing the exact same thing. And I think there's all kinds of things that are going on in this world where almost all of us don't know anything about what's going on. On the other hand, it's pretty clear to me right now that the powers that be, the world establishment, if you want to look at the United States of America, mm-hmm. and the NATO countries, have decided that Ukraine, and apparently Ukraine and Zelensky are happy to be part of this, have decided that Ukraine is going to be the place where they kill Russia permanently as a nation that can threaten the world, and that's what's going on here. Nobody really wants to talk about it, but this has all been designed and put in place in advance, and Russia is going to spend itself to death on this, and they will fail. And from the standpoint of what is good for the world and good for America, taking Russia out this way and risking some things to take Russia out this way is obviously a decision that has been made. And on paper, I have to say that in general, I support it.
Patrick Hanley is our card-carrying Democrat tonight. Patrick, where do you come down on this $95 billion package?
A huge sigh of relief that we've come to our senses and that we're going to stand up for Ukraine, which was invaded by Ukraine, by Vladimir Putin, where we've supported the European alliances and funding the Ukrainian war effort to defend Ukraine against an invasion, and now we're ponying up. And we've seen in the last 3 months that Ukraine has lost significant ground and many thousands of brave Ukrainian soldiers fighting without ammunition despite our promises. And now we can follow through. Thank goodness. So I think this aid couldn't come soon enough. I'm also glad to see the $9 billion in humanitarian assistance, not only for folks in Gaza, but for around the world, which is, again, going to back up promises that we've made.
Stephanie?
Well, my question...
Did he change your mind on anything?
Not at all. I just for kicks and giggles, I just searched who's given the most to Ukraine. Obviously, it's the United States. I think we should be picking up the tip, but not the tab. And I just wonder, is it okay if I ask, what have we done with the money that we've given so far? We know it's a corrupt country. I just want to know, can we have like a forensic accounting of where the money went?
Right.
And that's just... And again, how much money, Patrick, should we give to them?
And that's exactly what happens. That's actually already part of defense appropriations. So we're getting those investigations. We'll continue to get those investigations. Don't worry about where the money's going. Where it's going is it's buying armaments, it's buying weapons and ammunition to protect Ukrainians against Russian
invasion.
Well,
how much money should we give?
How long will Putin extend this war?
So just an
How long will Putin threaten European security? And do you want Ukraine to lose the war?
What I'm concerned about is the war that we're losing every day in America with our borders being open and people coming
across.
You mean
the border that Republicans could have funded back in January?
The funding wasn't for the closed border, by the way.
And that is, do you think the Republicans could have used this, could they have used their leverage, although it's just it's minimal leverage, could they have used any of that leverage to get something for the southern border?
Probably. The answer is no. And they've basically been, you know, this brings in another issue, which is it's not directly connected, but obviously in politics, everything is a little bit connected. The fact of the matter is that they were, you know, people were talking about, and Senator Lankford tried to put together some kind of a border, bill. Trump essentially told the House and told the Republican Party, don't pass it. And Trump was absolutely 100% correct on the politics of it. The politics is you don't give your horribly inept opponent who's been screwing up the border with a horrible party. The Democratic Party is essentially an open borders party that doesn't want any borders in the country, period, end of story.
That's
hurting them in the polls.
So you don't give them a win.
You don't give them a win. Patrick, please.
Well, that is the politics.
That is the politics, and it's bad policy.
One at a time. Patrick.
So once again, what you're talking about is Republicans putting politics above policy. They know what good policy is. They negotiated it in a bipartisan way, and then they torpedoed it for the politics.
Which is exactly what you just said. It's actually a mistake on your part. Because the fact is, the overall policy is that you have to end the Democratic Party control of the Senate and the presidency. Okay. And because of that, you have to win the next election.
Amen.
Okay, we got a hot one burning tonight in Elk Grove Village. I'm Bruce Dumont. This is Beyond the Beltway. Thanks for joining us tonight from coast to coast, border to border, and around the world at beyondthebeltway.com.
I'll be here to hear what's on your mind.
Kids want to share what's going on in their lives with the adults around them. Parents, grandparents, teachers, coaches, and more. They want to know you're listening, and they want to listen to you. They want your input and guidance, early and often, on all kinds of topics. When it comes to a serious subject like underage drinking, they want to know your expectations, as well as how and why, as a young person, they should avoid alcohol. How you talk about it will change as your child grows. But the important thing is to talk about it. Not just once for an hour when you think the time is right, but in 60 one-minute conversations and more that are part of your everyday talks. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
When you need me, I'll be by your side.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nia Hurd-Garris with today's tip for kids from the American Academy of Pediatrics. As parents, we want our children to grow up healthy and strong. That means helping teens take responsibility for their health as they become young adults. One way to do that is to make sure they have one-on-one time with their pediatrician. That helps them become comfortable talking about any health issue with their doctors and with you. So make sure to give your teen a voice. It's good for their health. For more on teen health, visit healthychildren.org.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid
knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Rooster went back. This is one of those times when we probably should just keep the tape rolling during the during the breaks. And again, I don't know. It once upon a time, those who were listening on YouTube or Facebook, they heard all that stuff. So I don't know.
Hot likes.
We'll come back, and all
of my Facebook friends know exactly where I stand.
We'll put you on the record, Bruno, because you had some interesting stipulating situations. I want to go back to you, Patrick, because let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
If things stay the same, can the Democrats do anything other than blaming Trump for his involvement in the House vote? Is that the best political card you have to make, or do you really believe there are Americans out there, and there may be some, who will acknowledge that, by golly, Joe Biden did make this better?
And you're talking about the border specifically.
I'm talking about the border. Did he make the border better?
The best thing that Democrats can do is articulate a vision for a fully funded border that works and an immigration system that works better for Americans.
What does that mean to you?
So my wife is an immigrant, and we are in the green card process.
Legal immigrant.
And it has taken years for us to get through this. Mm-hmm. And what is very apparent to me is that USCIS and the immigration officials in this country are woefully understaffed and underfunded. And that's been a problem for about 30 years since the last border bill, right?
Okay.
And so a fully funded border in which we have the resources to process legal and undocumented immigration as well as asylum seekers, I think would result in a much more secure border and a much more humane process. And we don't see either party talking about their vision for what a good future looks like.
Well, let me ask you this. Are you sorry that the Democratic Party and President Biden have not focused on that thing which you feel is unique but very important? Should they be talking about that as opposed to just blaming Donald Trump? Because that is pure politics.
That the focus came in during the bipartisan negotiation of the most recent border legislation. Right. And then that was torpedoed by the House and by President Trump. And I think the reality is we need to call it as we see it. We need to tell Americans that Republicans are not serious about the border, that they are playing politics, that they have no interest in fully funding the border.
No one's going to buy
that. Is there part of that that's truthful? Stephanie?
Well, I know there's some uniparty people that probably want the border open, but true conservatives, and especially I don't get offended. I hate that word offended has been overused, but it makes me angry when people that aren't, my mom lives in the hood, and I have to go visit her. And when I was at an event Tuesday in the black community talking to activists, and these black women are coming out saying, I'm going to vote for Trump because he's going to send them back. When these people are pushed into the neighborhood where black communities are already struggling, and these people are put into their neighborhoods, and they see, once again, black people are being put at the back of the bus for illegals, this is a very serious issue. You need to spend some time. You need to watch the city hall meetings with Brandon Johnson being called on the carpet by these people. This is a real big issue.
Not and just in Chicago, either.
Pretend that bill was going to do anything other than fund how fast we're processing people. Let's talk about how many Chinese dissidents are coming across the border. Let's talk about how many people on the watch
What's
list
wrong
are coming across
Chinese
the border.
Dissidents claiming asylum?
They are enemies.
That's
exactly.
No.
I'm sorry.
Dissidents
in China who are trying to claim asylum
in the United
States people that are coming
are not
across.
The enemy.
Okay, I'll take that back. But the people that are on the watch list for terrorists are coming across an open border, you think that the whole process of just securing our borders, is that just crazy?
Here's the question I have. When someone is on a watch list, the story, the narrative is that those people that are on the watch list, they somehow still get through and into the innerings of the country. They make it in. My question is, if someone is on a terror watch list and their name and their face are walking before a border guard, why doesn't the border guard stop them?
Well, they have been stopped, but think about all the ones that get through.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what
if the ones who get through, is that incompetence on the part of the Border Patrol? I mean, Bruno,
during the Trump administration, the way this was done.
Let's not blame it.
I'm not putting blame anywhere. I'm just saying is if because we hear about the people on a terror watch list that got into the country. Number one, how do we know they're on a terror watch list?
And how do we know they got into the country?
And how
many
do we know that they
got
into the country?
Those are all things that have to be determined by who's here, who you catch.
And does that also come back to the fact that possibly we have some incompetent people in that position and they're waving the wrong people into the country?
We're just wildly underfunded. Look, here's the thing. It's like forget about the border patrol people and the actual infrastructure that's on the border, because that's not the issue anymore. That's part of the issue, clearly. But the big part of the issue is that we say that the country's not open, but we're waving all kinds of people in. We're handing them apps and saying, sign up for a court case 3 years from now. The fact is that at this moment in time, and you can lay this directly at Biden's feet and Biden administration. You can't really lay anything on Biden's feet because he's not the one running things, obviously.
Amen.
But the fact of the matter is you've got this party that has essentially set open borders. So what's going on at the wall and what's going on with the Border Patrol doesn't matter, because we're waving in hundreds and tens of thousands and hundreds
Bruno,
of thousands
Bruno, how do you think
people.
This actually happens? Somebody pulls up
Bruno,
to the wall. What do you think is actually going on? Because
Ladies and gentlemen, hold it.
You've got to
follow the orchestra leader here. It's your turn. Patrick.
Bruno, the way that you described waving hundreds of thousands of people across the border does not happen.
I've been to the border. I've seen the walls. I spent the weekend
and
in McAllen,
nobody
Texas.
Nobody is waving anybody through
yes,
any
they're
sorts
walking
of wall.
Right through.
Hold it. Please, let's have one conversation at a time. It's very heated, which is great. But tell us, how are they getting in if they're not?
Please, Patrick, enlighten us.
Tell us.
So more often than not, the way in which this works is when somebody claims asylum, they're released back into the country. And that is the problem that you are having. That's what you are saying is waving people in. But these are people who have claimed asylum, who are then going to be called back into court.
What kind of asylum?
Now, the problem is the asylum, this docket, is years and years long. And that's because there's not enough agents, there's not enough infrastructure, there's not enough people dealing with these applications to get through them in any sort of an expeditious way. And these people can't
Stephanie.
So you know, I love like all these mayors that were running on being a sanctuary city because they thought, well, Texas is going to take the brunt of this. It's not my issue. Now suddenly he's sending them, you know, he's got the wherewithal to say, I'm going to send them to New York. I'm going to send them to Chicago. And suddenly, oh my goodness, we don't have any room and we're overwhelmed. And I'm like, we can't have these people coming in. We can't afford it. We have nowhere to house them. And it's not fair to little black children in Chicago that can't read, and all this money is being spent on illegals, homeless children in Chicago sleeping on trains, but we need to worry about a shelter for people that shouldn't even be here. You need to explain to me, as a descendant of enslaved Americans who my ancestors fought to build this country, that's what the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment was written for descendants of slaves, not for illegals. We need to seal our borders. We can't afford to take care of the people that we have here. We just don't have the money.
Did you support Bruno, Chicago Home?
Bruno.
Yeah. Okay. No. So I want to address address something that Patrick said because and I don't want to be rude, but this is the perfect time to say don't blank in my face and tell me it's raining.
Thank you.
I mean, you know, at some it's asylum and there's not enough. It's like clearly there's not enough infrastructure. I'll just say this. I'm pro legal immigration. Yes. I think this country needs more people, and I think we should have more people. But the way that they're doing it right now is such a lie and a scam. It's like, oh, they're here for asylum. It's like, you can't, with a straight face, say you're not waving people in when you're surreptitiously flying people over the border and into airports at 3 a.m. And then, of course, you have to have a bunch of conservative TV YouTube people to be the ones that are actually catching them in the act.
This is nonsense.
Let's let Patrick explain. Yeah. That,
I feel like he's very double teamed.
Just a second. Okay, we'll just a second. Yeah. That is a fact, Patrick. Yeah. Bruno
what
Bruno just said, it's a fact that our government is flying people in from around the world. Mm-hmm. They're buying their own tickets, but they are flying them in. Is that a good idea?
So are you saying people buy tickets to fly into this country and then they claim asylum? Is that what you're taking issue with?
I guess we don't know whether they're claiming asylum beforehand. I assume they're doing it beforehand. And by the way, the fact that they're being flown in, I mean, how does that play to generations of people that came here from different countries? They didn't fly here. They didn't land and get a credit card or a hotel room or any of these things that many of the people that are coming to the country now.
Listen, I don't have the details on these so-called flights into the country, but I got to say, this sounds like the sort of thing where we're missing a lot of context. Right-wing radio folks showing up at airports aren't the most credible journalists we should be relying on.
So we shouldn't believe their footage on their phone.
One at a time, Bruno.
Maybe we don't need any context. Maybe it's obvious. Maybe we have an administration here who, for whatever reason, some of which we can guess, some of which we don't know, are waving in as many people as they can. They're doing this in the face of the worst polling they've even come across. They're doing this at the risk of their own party's success, and there's a reason they're doing it, and I'd love to find out why. And I'm saying that as someone who's pro-immigration.
Do you believe that the reason that's happening is because the Democratic Party wants more black and brown people from all over the world to come to the United States at some point in the future? We let them vote. They will vote Democrat. Yep. That's my question. Just a minute. That's my question. Yep. I want to hear everybody's response to that.
All right.
The Great Theory, back shortly.
This is Carol Platt Liebau for townhall.com. The Iranian regime attacked Israel on Saturday with over 300 drones, cruise missiles, and ballistic missiles. Most Americans were horrified by the news. They would have been appalled to realize that America has effectively funded these drones and missiles that rain down on our closest Middle Eastern ally, thanks to the disastrous Obama-Biden-Iran policy. The Obama deal with Iran did nothing to curb its long-term nuclear ambitions. And it did provide Iran with billions in sanctions relief. After Biden came into office, the nuclear deal was resurrected with billions more in sanctions relief funneled to Iran. By October 7th of last year, sanctions relief to Iran had totaled more than $50 billion. That can buy plenty of drones and missiles. It's time for the Biden administration to do what's right and stop appeasing the enemies of our country and its allies. I'm Carol Platt-Lebow.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Matthew.
Sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No, thanks, I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Let's be honest. The National Symphony may not be in his future, but he wanted to try violin. So you said yes because you love him. And if you love him that much, love him enough to make sure he's buckled up and in the back seat. Find out more about keeping your kids safe in your vehicle at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
We are all back. Blood pressure way up here this evening. Everybody through the roof. This is the point where we let everybody talk about a little bit about their background. And we're going to start with Bruno Behrend. Give us 30 seconds, Bruno.
My name is Bruno Behrend. I work in the nonprofit sector, building houses. I kind of do what Habitat for Humanity does, but only in one town. And I used to be involved more in politics here. I used to do some consulting for some Republican candidates. And I also had a talk show. Actually started off here in this studio and like this, and then ended up on a small station up in the northern suburbs.
And you're a blogger.
I'm a blogger. Blogging, of course, has been destroyed by Facebook and Amazon and Google. So now the only way you can really get any traction is to get on one of the social media sites. So I choose Facebook because I'm old.
That's okay. Stephanie Trussell.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Trussell. I am, I would like to call myself a political commentator at this point, and I own a hot dog restaurant with my husband in our town in Lyle, Boss Dog. So I jokingly tell people I'm a cashier at a hot dog restaurant, and I get an opportunity to serve my community. And I just love any opportunity I can come on and get my, just talking about politics out of my system.
But you were the Republican candidate for lieutenant governor. The last time around.
I had
and
the pleasure.
And you lost, but so the
we won 57% of the vote in the primary in a six-way race. But, I mean, in the actuality, 7 minutes after the polls closed on Election Day, they called the race for J.B. Pritzker because the Republican Party in Illinois refuses to embrace early voting and ballot chasing. Mm-hmm. So he had already banked enough votes. And so until we start voting early, because how can we make up
and
6 weeks of early voting in one day? That's the math just ain't mathing on that. So.
Patrick Hanley,
I'm a small business owner and a political organizer in New Trier Township, just north of the city. Our company is called Piglet in Bed. We sell retail linen, bedding, and sheets and homewares. And
high
it's
end.
Great to be back on the show. High end. Beautiful stuff.
And you have a young son.
I do. I've got a six-month-old baby who's keeping me very busy and very tired.
He's keeping you away from these microphones. You know
that's
that.
Right. That's true. It's keeping me, yeah.
I want to switch gears and talk about one other aspect. We were obviously We were knee-deep in a hot discussion, but maybe this one will be as hot. And I'm going to begin with you, Stephanie. TikTok. Should TikTok be banned in the United States?
Ooh, you know, as a conservative that doesn't like unnecessary laws and we like freedoms and all that, but it's controlled by China. I mean, it just doesn't make sense that they're allowed to buy property. They're allowed to do so many things in our country that we're not allowed to do in their country. I don't see why we shouldn't ban TikTok. I mean, it's just getting data from Americans, what it's doing to influence our elections. And also what I'm most concerned about are children. And I guess it's a parental thing about how old you allow your child to be on social media. But I don't see why. It's not allowed in China, right? Their kids aren't allowed to be on TikTok at a certain age, but we're going to allow our children to be.
Well, they have a different form of TikTok.
Right. There. So this TikTok isn't allowed in China. So I'm just going to. I've been kind of resisting coming down on either side of this. But since you've asked me point blank, it's like just ban it. I just don't see why we
Bruno
shouldn't.
Barron, where do you come down on this?
I have a slightly different take. First of all, I know next to nothing about TikTok other than that it's a big social media thing and it's very, very successful. I've read various articles about how addictive it is and how its algorithm is really dangerous. I will say this, and this will probably shock all the people in the audience and in the room, but if it's a good, and this is independent of TikTok, if it's a good idea to arrest parents or charge parents who buy their children alcohol, it's probably also a good idea to charge parents who buy their kids phones before age 18 and let them get on social media. All the evidence, and I love this about the left because they, of course, worship science and follow science, while all of us conservatives are all too stupid to follow science. All of the science says this. Social media makes people, especially youth, anxious. It makes them, it gives them all the wrong signals, everything, anxieties, yeah. Everything that goes wrong. That Jonathan Haidt has done all the science on this. It's an open and shut science case how dangerous this stuff is. And if you're a parent who gives your kid a phone at age 8 and says, oh, go watch social media, you might as well just be buying them alcohol as well.
Wow. Patrick Hanley.
We got bold takes tonight. I actually I'm not too far away from either of you. On this one, I agree that social media is corrosive. I agree that we should have thoughtful regulations around the way that social media is used and what social media companies can do and how they market, especially to kids. I think that's really important. On the TikTok case, I also am a strong proponent of freedom of speech and a big fan of business when it's done creatively and entrepreneurially. This one is different because the company is, of course, hosted in China, and there are backdoors to potential CCP influence. And I'll just say, seeing on the Hill such broad support among Democrats and Republicans tells me that there's probably even more that we don't quite know that is being shared with folks as to why this is so dangerous. And so forcing ByteDance to sell off the U.S. subsidiary of TikTok makes some sense to me. And I think they'll do it. I think they'll make plenty of money doing it. And I think TikTok will continue to be a successful company.
Very good. I think only Biden and Kamala should be allowed on TikTok because they're very entertaining. But just
well,
my
I mean, but I, great for but you, I but really, I think that one of the points that Patrick just made is just it is so incredible to look at the votes on this particular bill. With the number of Republicans, the number of Democrats, if there was anything that's close to almost a slam dunk, it's this. And yet, from a political standpoint, I want to ask you, Stephanie, a lot of young people use this. They love this. This is their lifeline. Mm-hmm. Are they going to be forever punitive to Republicans or Democrats, whoever their congressperson is? Are they going to take it out on them come November? Will they stay home? Will Donald Trump benefit from this? Will Joe Biden benefit from this? I mean, who's going to be wearing the collar on this when literally millions of young people who love TikTok, they're going to be PO'd and they want to take it out on somebody? What are they going to do?
Well, I don't know the numbers. Are a lot of young people voting for Trump? Are they voting for Biden at this point? I don't know.
We don't know, but we believe that a lot of young people will vote. I mean, the Democrats and Biden is very concerned about the recent polls suggest that he's not doing well with young people. He's considerably behind where he was 4 years ago with young people. I don't necessarily see people gravitating to Donald Trump, but maybe they are. I think possibly a big winner on this could be Robert Kennedy. But he doesn't like TikTok either.
We should do what's right. Forget about the political backlash. If it's the right thing to do, and we'll just figure that out later and reach those people another way. But we need to do this, and it needs to be done right now. Forget about what's going to happen. Oh, they won't vote for me. They'll get over it.
I would love to hear from a TikTok user who's out there in radio TV land.
I'm a TikTok user. My wife is much more of a TikTok user than I am. Right. And I got to say, the platform itself, and Bruno,
it's good for your business.
It's very good for our business, actually. Mm-hmm. Piglet in Bed is a very vibrant TikTok following, and it's a really great way to engage with our audience. So it's you know, and if and when TikTok goes away, there's going to be something else similar like it that pops up. That's just the nature of capitalism and the nature of innovation. Mm-hmm. And I would say that, because TikTok is so valuable, I would be very surprised if it wasn't sold. I really don't see it just shutting down one day, going black, and having everybody be frustrated. I don't know that most TikTok users are going to realize that there was a change in control.
Well, I generally think that, I mean, in terms of, and again, I've only seen snippets of it and examples of it. I do know that TikTok became...
You don't like to dance?
I could do without the way people think that they're dancing on TikTok. But I mean, just the entire I will say this as an unapologetic social conservative, just looking at what TikTok does, it makes you clearly more narcissistic. Just by look at me, look at the pictures I'm taking, mm-hmm. which of course that was around. Social media did that before TikTok.
Right.
And now that TikTok has become so successful, Facebook added Reels, which I'm on Facebook. I have no interest in doing Reels.
Right.
It took my favorite place to get information, YouTube, and created an entire layer of YouTube Shorts, half of which are stolen off of TikTok anyway, mm-hmm. that make YouTube almost unwatchable. And as you do watch a few YouTube Shorts, you start realizing how unbelievably addictive it is to watch short
Without
after
question.
Short after
right.
short,
right.
which
for
at,
any age,
at some
yeah,
right.
At,
right.
At,
just one more video, one
at,
more video.
At some
right.
level, this stuff all reshapes the mind. I mean, if you just sit in your chair and do nothing but lift, and do nothing but curls and curl heavy weights all day, you're going to end up with a bicep that's the size of your thigh and nothing else, right? And your wrists and everything else is going to atrophy. This is clearly the mind muscle metaphor works here.
Do you feel the same way about Fox News? Someone that just watches Fox News all day, all the time.
I don't watch any cable other than the snippets I see here and there. I don't watch Fox. I don't watch MSNBC. I think they're all awful.
Stephanie?
Well, I stopped watching it when I came out of the closet as a Republican, because people would say to me, oh, you're only regurgitating what you heard on Fox. And Fox isn't conservative enough for me. I don't sit still long enough to watch anything. So the only reason I watch it when I'm prepping for this show, I watch all the Sunday morning shows. I sit through it painstakingly, but no, I don't watch cable
news. Now, Patrick, do you get your gospel from NPR?
No. I actually don't listen to as much NPR as I should. I love it whenever I tune in.
Oh, my goodness.
No, really.
Let's lay hands on
Patrick.
Every couple
of weeks, I'll listen to a podcast
and
I enjoy it. But
Just enough.
Once a week is way too much.
For those that did not know, the recent survey, Mr. Berliner, who wrote the piece on The Insider, who wrote the piece on NPR, the survey that he took of his editorial board or the editorial writers, 87%. 87 out, I'm sorry, more than 100%, 100%. 87 out of 87 fellow workers were all and only registered Democrats. 87 out of 87. So that's what you're going to get if you listen to NPR a lot. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly.
This is Dennis Prager. Sign up today for an unforgettable experience in Israel this October. Mike Gallagher and I are traveling to the Holy Land on the Stand with Israel tour with our trusted partner, Inspiration Cruises and Tours. This trip of a lifetime to Israel is one you don't want to miss. Register today before it's too late at StandWithIsraelTour.com, StandWithIsraelTour.com, or call 855-565-5519, 855-565-5519.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school?
Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
What if the music stopped? If the familiar voices were silenced? If there were no breaking news updates? What if your companion and connection to your community came with a monthly fee? Don't worry. We're free local radio with you wherever you go. Celebrating 100 years and looking forward to the next 100. We are broadcasters. Text radio to 52886 and let Congress know you depend on your local TV and radio stations. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The jurors and alternates in the Donald Trump New York case with Stormy Daniels have now been set. Any reaction to the process of jury gathering? It seemed to me they moved along rather quickly.
Very fast. Some of us were expecting to wait weeks to get a jury that would finally be deemed impartial by both the prosecutor and the defendants.
What do you think of the jurors?
Really interesting. A really interesting cross-section of Manhattaners, right? Like, I thought hearing about the back and forth between the prospective jurors and the judge was hilarious. Mm-hmm. Like, you've got the Lebanese banker who does yoga, and you've got the all sorts of interesting characters.
Bruno, did you follow any of this?
No, I don't think it's a very important thing at all. I didn't follow it.
Tell that to Donald Trump.
Well, you know, Donald Trump does just fine being sued and convicted indicted and everything. He does just fine with all these things because apparently the people who support him and the people who are undecided really don't care that much. And while I'm sure that some of the things Donald Trump has done might be indictable and might be prosecutable, the idea that he's being dragged through all of this stuff, particularly in aggressive far-left jurisdictions because they can do it and because they do it. Even a small plurality of Democrats understand that this is lawfare. This is the weaponization. 100%. This is the weaponization of the legal process, and everybody knows it. Yeah. Even if Trump did something wrong, which he may have, even if Trump gets convicted for the after the documents case in Florida and all this other stuff, there might be a there, but everyone knows that it's still lawfare.
Stephanie?
Let's pretend that this isn't all about keeping him off of the campaign trail. I mean, this is when people have a conversation when they'll say, you're going to support someone who has 92 indictments. They're not a serious person because this is not a serious process. In any other cases, no one else would be charged like this. And I love the fact that when he goes into a bodega, when he goes into a Chick-fil-A, and you have black and brown people saying, we love you. And we know that Biden he's going to have to campaign this time. He can't stay in his basement because of COVID. This is keeping Trump off the campaign trail. But come on,
we've
met before, and you actually said to me that Biden, you know people that work in the White House, and he's sharp as a tack. And so I chuckle, because you know he's not. Okay. And so when it comes to campaigning, you know Trump is going to out-campaign him. So they're just trying to hobble him and keep him off the campaign trail.
Patrick.
I just couldn't disagree more, but that's not a huge surprise.
Right.
I will say that it's very heartening at a time when it seems like you can say anything and get away with it, that it seems like you can commit crimes and get away with it, that finally a powerful person is seeing his day in court and is going to be judged by impartial jurors. That's pretty exciting.
Really quick, I have to say this.
And by the way, it's not my fault he did crimes in Manhattan.
Okay, shouldn't the judge recuse himself?
Why?
His daughter, that whole thing.
Why?
Are you kidding me? We're pretending like all this. It's like kidding.
What I would really appreciate is for Republican operatives to stop trying to attack the justice system at every single turn to try and prevent there from being
I don't believe it's that at every turn. I certainly disagree.
Most turns.
At every turn. But when you have a judge who personally has been supportive of the Democratic Party financially. Mm-hmm. And you have a daughter, who you assume you love, who is actively involved in raising money for the Democratic Party, and this is a very highly political time, a judge who's thinking clearly would have recused himself.
I disagree. Especially at a time when judges are elected and judges are political players in a political system, and we set it up that way. So you're going to have politics with most serious people involved in the Jewish system. Yeah, of course.
To those across the aisle, how do you respond to them? How do you respond to a person who isn't terribly political, but sees it as I just articulated? This looks smelly. This doesn't look right. Why can't a judge, if he's really smart, why can't a judge look at himself in the mirror and say, you know what? I got to sit this one out. I don't think that's partisan, Patrick. I think it's common sense. But you don't see it that way.
We're holding jurors to higher standards than the judge. I mean, if the jurors were connected like that, they would have to be.
I want to go to Patrick.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I asked Patrick a very serious question.
Okay. So are you saying that judges should not participate in politics? Or cannot participate? Because in Cook County,
that literally
wouldn't work.
I'm saying
because they run for office.
I'm saying that when a judge has been as active as this judge has been, and his daughter is currently active in raising money for the Democratic Party, that is a unique family situation that he should recuse himself. There may be other Democrats there who would be perfect.
The job. It is the job of the judge to be impartial. That is their job. That is their vocation. Way. Hypothetically, they've been doing it for decades. And we have to hold them to that standard.
Well, we'll see if he's impartial.
We will. That's the beauty of the system, isn't it?
The beauty of the system is that stuff like this is going to happen, and it's going to happen more and more. And each side, the idea that the Republicans don't have their unbelievable dose of hypocrisy in some situations. what's so hilarious about conversations like this is when Patrick says something like, the Republicans have to stop attacking the judicial process. And then when a case goes against their way, their party, it's okay to attack the judicial process. And then now we have all kinds of people saying, let's get rid of the Supreme Court. Oh, come on, Patrick.
Doxing jurors? That's just not something I've heard about Democrats.
You guys dox everybody.
Everybody.
You started doxing, and you're pretending.
Invented it.
This is what's so embarrassing about this conversation. At least say, did it too.
Right.
Because you did. All of you did, like we are.
But we're all of a sudden becoming the entirety of the left and the entirety of the right, which obviously neither of us are. So I can say you've done all sorts of crazy stuff, and that would be an unproductive conversation.
Stephanie? Do you think having Donald Trump in the courtroom politically is better for him than out on the campaign trail saying things that may put his foot in his mouth?
Well, a lot more people are supporting him. They understand if they can do that to Donald Trump, they can do that to us. And I think this is backfiring on them.
And the politics of going to the bodega and Chick-fil-A plays well.
After every court appearance, he should go to the bodega.
I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly in the next hour, we're going to be talking about campaign politics. We're going to get into politics in the second hour. We've avoided it in the first hour. Back shortly. Back, we continue with our number two of Beyond the Beltway, and our guests continue in studio. In fact, Stephanie and Patrick, they were going at each other, trying to change each other's political persuasions during the break, and nothing happened. No needle was being moved. Tom Bevan joins us on this program, along with Bruno Barron, continues as a guest in studio. But Tom Bevan joins us. He is the editor and the co-founder of Real Clear Politics. And I have been saying for almost 20 years now, it is the best source for political news. It's balanced. It's straight. It gives you all the information on what's happening polling-wise in the United States. He's terrific. He's going to be with us for this hour. And, again, we are going to be talking about presidential politics and also U.S. Senate politics, because the control of the Senate and the House, obviously, that is also very important that we will decide in November of this year. And Tom, welcome back to Beyond the Beltway. It's nice to have you back.
Great to be back, Bruce. Thanks.
I'd like to begin with a procedural question, because when I think, and most of the times I'm seeing polls on television these days, very few of them are including Robert Kennedy Jr. In that polling. However, NBC this morning, they announced this on Meet the Press. They had a first three-way that I saw in the presidential race, and they had Biden at 39%, Trump at 37%, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. at 13%, and if you extracted Robert F. Kennedy from the race, Donald Trump would be in the lead. You put him into the race, Joe Biden is in the lead. So my question to you is, does that surprise you? And how many of the polls that you deal with on a daily basis include Robert F. Kennedy Jr.?
So that result did surprise me, because in most of the data that we've seen, basically it boils down to the more candidates that get added to the race, the worse it is for Joe Biden. So if you look at our RCP national average, which is, again, that's the two-way average is I want to say 10 polls that have been taken over the last like 3.5 weeks or so. Trump's lead in that is 0.4%, so basically tied. And if you look at the five-way average, and to your point, Bruce, not every single pollster is doing five-way. Some are doing three-way and five-way. Some are just doing three-way. But when you look at the five-way aggregate, Trump's lead goes up to 1.3%. So he's basically running about a point better nationally in a five-way race than he is in a two-way race. But again, that NBC News poll that you just mentioned, I think, you know, garnered some attention, because it's one of those that suggests that, you know, adding Kennedy to the mix and some of these other candidates may not be, you know, just a fait accompli, you know, against Biden. It might actually hurt Trump as well.
Right. When you look at the polls, how many polls do you look at, do you consider, and when you aggregate the polls, how many polls are you aggregating on Real Clear Politics?
I mean, it depends on it. I can't give you a number of like the polls that we include in our averages. I mean, at the national level, it's probably 15 or 20. At the state level, it depends. You know, some pollsters only poll individual states, and so it'll vary from state to state. So it's At any given time, though, we've got about, I would say, 8 to 10 polls in our national averages. Sometimes it'll be 12. Sometimes it'll be upwards of 15. It just depends on the cycles. Like most people will poll right after a big news event, or they'll poll right after a big holiday.
If someone, if I'm running one of these polls and I want to add Robert Kennedy or Cornel West or Jill Stein, if I want to add one of these people, does it cost me more money in the polling process?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, listen, part of what pollsters are dealing with, right, is it is very expensive to reach people these days, right? They have to make, you know, 10 times as many phone calls today as they had to 10 years ago
right.
to get the same number of respondents. And they're using multimodal. So they're using phone, they're using text, they're using online. But and part of it is the more questions you ask, the lower response rate you get. Right. So you don't want to ask 30, 40, 50 questions. You want to ask 5 questions. And so you have to add a question to ask about Kennedy and these other candidates. But typically, if that's one of your core questions, it's not going to cost you anything extra to do that.
Yeah. The reason I asked that is because the Fox poll last week had Donald Trump, I think, up by 6 points. And as a political junkie at this moment in time, if I'm looking at a poll, I want them to include Robert Kennedy and West and Stein, because that in many cases is going to be, that's going to be the picture. Now, if a certain candidate like Kennedy, Kennedy's not on in all states, neither is Stein, neither is even the Libertarian candidate might be, but if they're not on all the states that they need to be on to win, you know, the Electoral College, I mean, I don't. Maybe they don't get included. I mean, how much discussion goes on at the levels of Real Clear Politics when you look at these bigger, broader polling questions?
Well, I mean, so we just aggregate the polls that the organizations put out. So if they include a 5-way number, we put that in. If we have a page, if it's just a 3-way number, and everybody's doing a 2-way number. But I think you make an important point, Bruce, which is, number one, it's not just a 2-way race. It's going to be more than a 2-way race in many of these states. Point number two, we don't have a national election. We have a state-by-state election. So it really does matter, where are these candidates getting on the ballot? And that's something at the state level, most polling organizations are doing a 2-way race. Some are doing a 5-way race, but not all. And so the data is a little less robust at the state level. Because again, it's tougher to poll at the state level. It's a little bit more expensive. But we do have 2-way and 5-way numbers for pretty much every single one of the big 7 battlegrounds that are going to decide this election.
Okay. And we're going to get into those in the next segment, but an old friend of yours, Bruno Barron, is here. He's got a question or comment for you.
Well, hey, Tom, I don't know if I qualify as an old friend, but we did have breakfast once, right? A few months after.
I remember, Bruno.
A few months after you started Real Clear Politics, which I still tell everybody is the best website on the web for political stuff, bar none.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So I guess I only got a few minutes to ask this question. You can ponder it over the break. But if I look at stuff like the Perot phenomenon in 92 and 96 and all that other kind of stuff, and I look at other candidates being on the ballot, and this can go into the discussion of the Senate races, independent of what it might do for Trump, who I'm not a fan of, but I hope he wins if it's only the two of them. But I keep on saying that the more people are on the ballot, the better it is for the GOP, particularly for Senate races. And I was wondering if you had any data to back that up, or that makes sense. And I can probably ask after the break.
Well, you get a minute to do it now if you want, Tom.
Well, I mean, we can get into these numbers in the battleground states, but it pretty much is the same as the national. So in most of these battleground states, when more candidates are added to the mix, if you look at the 5-way versus the 2-way, Trump's lead expands. There are only 2 states where that's not true. And one of them is Wisconsin, and the other one's in Michigan. And we can talk about more about those 2 states after the break.
We will, because he hears the music, and he's an old radio guy. He knows that when the music comes in, it's time to sell something. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly. We're selling intelligent conversation this evening, and I think we're delivering on it. Back shortly.
Yeah. As a local business owner, you get called every week by marketing companies. We get it. We have hundreds of satisfied customers. Here's what a satisfied client recently said.
Open enrollment is going great. We're hitting record numbers. Thank you so much for this report. It really is amazing to see how the marketing is really shaping our enrollment around the city.
If you're a local business and ready for the next step, visit surroundchicago.com right now. Our experts are ready to help you take your marketing to the next level. Visit surroundchicago.com today.
In the new video series, Fault Lines, Professor Vody Bonkam examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide, available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
We continue with Beyond the Beltway, and Bruno, summarize your question, then we're going to let Tom tackle it, and then we're going to move on to some other issues.
Okay, so really quickly, I'm a big fan, even though I'm a conservative, I'm a big fan of having more people, more parties on the ballot in as many elections as possible, because when what I see is, in general, having more people on the ballot helps the GOP or helps the conservative idea a little bit better, because it brings more people to the polls, and some of those people tend to be a little bit of outliers. And one of the reasons I want Kennedy on the ballot as in many places as possible is because I actually think it's going to help the GOP win the Senate. And I want to know whether Tom thinks that's crazy or has a point, or whether, you know, whether there's a there.
Tom?
Well, I mean, we could talk about the Senate in a little bit, but as I mentioned, so in these seven battleground states, and we don't know where all these. I mean, we know Jill Stein's going to be on, I think, 33 ballots. We don't know where Kennedy's going to be right now. If you go, I think he's actually qualified for only a handful. If you go to his website, he's got this ballot tracker, and it's got, you know, where he is in every state, how many signatures he needs.
Right.
They expect to be on the ballot in Arizona and Georgia and some of these key battleground states.
Mm-hmm.
But so if you look at right now, these top seven battleground states, as I mentioned, Trump's leading in every single one of them except for Pennsylvania. And in Pennsylvania, there's a poll that has Biden plus 10, which is sort of an outlier. It's way different than the other polls. You take that poll out of the average and Trump would actually be leading there as well.
That's where he's spending all of his time as well.
Correct. But in five of those seven states, when you add more candidates to the ballot, Trump's lead goes up. And the only two states where that is not true is in Wisconsin and Michigan. And I mean, I'm not sure exactly what to make of that. Wisconsin is a notoriously difficult state to poll. You talk to pollsters, they'll tell you it's just because of no party registration and just the history of the state. It's a very, very evenly divided state and tough to poll. But those two states, I mean, if you look at where the averages are right now, and if the election were held today and those averages were spot on down to the tenth of a percentage point, you know, Donald Trump would win 293 to 245. So win the Electoral College. If Biden needs 25 electoral votes, if he were to win Wisconsin and Michigan, he would win the election 270 to 268. So you can see just how important those states are to Joe Biden's reelection vote.
In looking at these big seven states, and we're going to keep them up on the screen if Fritz, you can do that. If you look at the other 43 states, is there anything that's on the horizon in any of these 43 states where it's going to be a gimme for one party or the other that could disrupt these big seven and make it maybe seven or nine states? Or are those other 43 states foregone conclusions?
I mean, it's not foregone conclusions, but for example, Democrats think there's been an opening in Florida. That's a state that, you know, Trump won by 3 points in 2020. He had only won it by a point in 2016. And now with the abortion ban or whatever they have on this referendum on the ballot there in November, Democrats think that's something they can leverage to put that state back into play. Texas is another one where Democrats always think they can turn Texas blue. You know, Ted Cruz is on the ballot there. He only won by a couple of percentage points over Beto O'Rourke in 2018. I happen to think that won't happen this year. The only other state, and I always tell people to keep an eye on this because it was really, really close in 2016, and people don't remember this. Mm. It was not close in 2020, but we just had a poll come out last week showing Minnesota a two-point race. Joe Biden's leading in Minnesota, but Minnesota is one of those states that has also, in 2016, we saw a pretty dramatic shift among rural voters, working class voters, the sort of, you know, the Iron Hills and those folks. It's like they went heavily for Donald Trump. Now, in 2020, it was the epicenter of George Floyd and all that. So it wasn't really close, but it seems like it is going to be close again this year. And that's a state that would really upset the apple cart. That's 10 electoral votes that could go for Donald Trump.
And also, we should mention that Minnesota, as well as Michigan, those are the two states where there's a large number of pro-Palestinian voters, and they have already gone on the record of saying, you know, they're not committed to Joe Biden. So his Palestinian or Muslim voter support is going to be more important maybe in those states than any other states, but there's a lot of Muslims living elsewhere in the country as well. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And that's why you've seen the president spend as much time and effort as he has, in sort of trying to bring those voters back into the fold. He needs them.
Yep. And again, we've had a couple of Muslim American pro-Palestinian leaders on this program in the last few weeks, and they each have agreed that the genie is out of the bottle for the president when it comes to pro-Palestinian voters, that there isn't anything that Joe Biden could do to get them back in the fold. But again, we'll see whether that holds true, several months from now. You mentioned the United States Senate. You think there are eight key U.S. Senate seats that are up for grabs, and so we'll put them up on the screen and let you comment on them. They are Arizona, Michigan, Wisconsin, Montana, Ohio, Maryland, Nevada, and West Virginia. So let's go to Arizona, because Kerry Lake is a name that a lot of people are familiar with.
Well, let me start with the last one first, because that's in many ways it's a 51-49 Senate, and West Virginia is gone. It's Republican. That is a state that Donald Trump won by, 35 plus points. It is, unless there were some rumors that were floating around a week ago that Joe Manchin might get back in this race as an independent, but barring something crazy like that, this is a state that's going to vote Republican, and so your baseline is 50-50. Now, we have eight straight sort of true toss-ups in our map, and the one that's that's in that group that is not on on your sheet is Ted Cruz. I mentioned him.
Mm-hmm.
But going to Arizona, as you said, Bruce, you know, Carrie Lake is running there. She is desperately trying to sort of get to the middle, particularly on abortion. She's been sort of, you know, trying to get to the middle on that issue. And by the way, Ruben Gallego, who's the Democrat in that race, has also been, you know, he once called himself a proud progressive. He's no longer using that term. Is nowhere on his website or in any of his literature. He is also trying to portray himself as a candidate of the middle. And with Kyrsten Sinema getting out of that race, you know, some people think that helped Carrie Lake. But right now the polls show that Ruben Gallego has about a 6-point lead on average. I think we only have a couple of polls in that race. One of them, it's pretty close. The other one, he's up by, I think, double digits.
Does the abortion decision by their Supreme Court hurt Carrie Lake? Or help her?
I think it does. I mean, I think that's why she's been trying to mitigate that issue as best she can. It's certainly an issue that, again, if you look at on the list of what are your biggest concerns when pollsters ask that question to voters, abortion is usually well down the list. It's below the economy, inflation, immigration, healthcare, all sorts of things. But it is an issue that really does motivate a core constituency among Democrats, and as we've seen over the last couple of years, they've done a very good job of turning out voters on that issue in states where that is on the ballot.
What about Michigan in the Senate race?
Yeah, so Michigan is going to be, again, this is a state, remember, it's a blue state. It is, you know, Gretchen Whitmer was a big target of Republicans
right.
a couple of years ago because of her lockdown policies, and she won easy. It's mm-hmm. Democratic legislature. I mean, it's Democrats have control of all the levers of power in Michigan. Alyssa Slotkin is the Democratic candidate. She's a quality candidate, but Rogers is the Republican candidate, also a quality candidate on the Republican side. And so I think that's probably I would give Democrats the edge in that race. But to the point you mentioned, Bruce, right now we've had two polls that were taken in the last in the month of March, basically. One of them is a tie, and one of them has Slotkin up 2 points. So it's close right now.
Is this the Rogers that was also a member of Congress, the Intelligence Committee chair, or is it a different Rogers?
Mm-hmm.
Mike Rogers?
Mike Rogers.
Yeah, because he's a pretty sharp guy.
Mm-hmm. Sharp guy, good candidate. And again, go back to that point. If, you know, 10,000 Arab Americans in Dearborn stay home, don't vote for, you know, Joe Biden, don't end up voting for Alyssa Slotkin. That could be the difference in this race.
Okay, let's go back. Our next state is Wisconsin. Tammy Baldwin, an incumbent Democrat. Earlier on, she was described as probably likely to be reelected. Is that changing considerably?
I mean, she's got, again, when we get down to the Senate level, we don't have, in some cases, these primaries have just recently happened. We just know who the candidates are. So we don't have a ton of data. We've only got a couple of polls. Most recent one was the Marquette Law School poll, which is a pretty good poll by Wisconsin standards. Again, we've had some – Wisconsin's been the state with the biggest misses over the last couple cycles, which is why I phrase it that way. But Charles Franklin is a good pollster. And, you know, he's got Tammy Baldwin up 5 points in that race, and the other poll had her up 3. So she's got a small but sort of stable lead as of right now.
The Republican the Republican convention is going to be held in Milwaukee. Historically, does that ever have – what's the track record of winning a state if a Democratic or Republican convention was held in that state?
You know, that's a good question. I don't – think that it's going to matter a ton. Wisconsin is, without question, if you go back and look since the year 2000, okay, which I did,
yep.
And you take out 08 and 12, which is when Obama won Wisconsin, they fell in love with him, he won that easily. But in 2000, 2004, 2016, and 2020, in those four elections, the state of Wisconsin was decided by 60,000 votes total in four elections. Right. So an average of 15,000 votes. I mean, it is that evenly divided. It is that close, and it's hand-to-hand combat there politically.
So we'll see both candidates spending a lot of time there. Robert Kennedy, I'm sure, will spend some time there as well. I'm Bruce Dumont. We're talking with Tom Bevin. He is the editor and co-founder of RealClearPolitics.com. We've got our guests in studio as well. We will all hear what Tom has to say about the rest of those battleground states and also the key races for the U.S. Senate. I'm Bruce Dumont. Don't go away.
In the new video series, Fault Lines, Professor Voddie Baucham examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide. Available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
I love this song.
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in 1,000 pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball!
Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
We are back on Beyond the Beltway, and Tom Bevin from Real Clear Politics joins us. So we are handicapping the U.S. Senate races that are likely to be the key ones to watch come November. But we've got some questions in the audience here around the table. Patrick Hanley, you're a Democrat. You've got a question for Tom.
I am indeed. And Tom, thanks so much for being on and for answering our questions. I'm a bit naive, perhaps, when it comes to polling, but what I do understand is when these polls come together, oftentimes pollsters have to guess at what the turnout's going to be from various key demographic groups. And I feel like turnout is going to be a really big open question, whether it's the, you know, Arab American community around Biden or whether it's going to be who are RFK's voters. Do you have a perspective on how to think about turnout as we project ahead and as we try and predict things in these polls?
So that's a great question, and that is part of why polling is you know, part art and part science, right? You make the phone calls, you get your respondents, and then you have to extrapolate if you're doing it nationally or if you're doing it by state and to who's going to turn out. That's where the sort of judgment comes in. Now, how do pollsters do that? Well, they look at who's turned out in the past. They look at enthusiasm levels. How likely are you to vote? And they sometimes they'll rate them on a scale of 1 to 10. And only the folks who are an 8, 9, or 10 fall into that likely voter screen. And so it is one of those things. And again, I think that's part of the problem with the polling in 2016 and 2020 is that not only did folks, pollsters sort of miss Trump's strength in terms of turnout, they also missed in some of these demographic categories, right? They did not see this shift from, you know, for rural voters to Trump or from non-college educated white voters in particular in some of these states in the upper Midwest, Wisconsin, Michigan, like we talked about. So, you know, I thought after 2016 that pollsters would be able to sort of recognize their mistakes and rectify them. Polling in 18 was pretty good. In 2020, it was actually worse than 2016 in a lot of ways, right? Joe Biden was vastly overestimated at the national level, way more so than Hillary Clinton, and also in some of these key swing states. So here we are again 4 years later. Here we are. Donald Trump is on the ballot again. And the problem is Donald Trump is a turnout machine for both parties, right? Mm-hmm. He turns out Republicans who don't turn out in midterm elections. He turns out people who are disaffected and haven't turned out in the past. Maybe they didn't turn out in 2020 or 2016 or the elections before that. But he also energizes Democrats across the board. And so, as the proprietor of a website that produces aggregates of polling, you know, it's kind of like, you know, our averages are only as good as the polls that go into them. And so I think some pollsters, again, this gets back into a whole discussion, sort of the Republican-leaning pollsters, Trafalgar, Rasmussen, Insider Advantage. If you go look and we put together produced report cards for all of these pollsters by cycle and then in the aggregate, right, over the last five cycles. And so in 2016, the Republican pollsters were way better than, you know, either any of the mainstream media pollsters or sort of left-wing pollsters. Same thing in 2020. But the left-leaning pollsters, the Quinnipiacs and the CNNs and the Washington Post and those folks were more accurate in 2018 and in 2022, right? So it's we're kind of back to that situation. Do we look at the Republican pollsters and think, oh, they probably have it more right this time around? Mm-hmm. Or do we look at because of, again, the way that we're projecting – these pollsters are projecting who's going to turn out. It is kind of a crapshoot. And that's one of those things about this business. Like you don't know until the day after the election who was right and who was wrong.
Stephanie, you have a question?
Well, before I ask my question, I want to give you a thank you because I don't know if you remember me from 2014 when my show was on right after yours.
I learned from you, Stephanie.
Oh, thank you. But I learned from you. You would do your show standing up. And for the next 7 years, I did my show standing up because you just had this energy standing up at the counter doing your show. So thank you. You were always so kind to me and Lord Kelly.
That's why I sit down.
but my question is, that other than Arizona, who recently tweaked their laws on abortion, I think that abortion is kind of a 2022 issue. That's so 2022. I don't see running on the Biden can run on his record. It's just horrible. There's only two things: Orange Man bad, and we like killing babies. Just how much is the abortion issue an issue in states? You know, overall, is that going to be a big issue in come November?
Listen, as I said, you go look at the data on this, you go look at the polls. Most pollsters ask this question: what's the most important issue to you? What is your top concern? And abortion is sort of way down the list. Now, when you break that out by party, right, Democrats, it's way more important to – not way more, but it's more important to Democrats than it is to certainly Republicans, and independents are somewhere in the middle. That being said, I don't think there's – you can't really deny that Democrats have – used that issue, exploited that issue, leveraged that issue, however you want to characterize it, very effectively in the last couple of cycles. And they're going to – that is certainly part of the playbook that it is coming in November. I mean, this election, in some ways, you want to – you know, Democrats are going to make it about abortion and threat to democracy, and Republicans are going to make it about inflation and immigration, right? And it's kind of like
– And the media is going to pick abortion as their key issue. They will ignore
well,
the
and,
other
and that's
Fox.
Fine. I mean, it's certainly
not just
true
Fox,
though that
I think a lot of not
he
just
said
Fox.
Except for Fox.
I want to go back to our list, Fritz. So let's go back to our list of these are U.S. Senate seats or races. We went through the first three of them. Montana has an incumbent Democrat, John Hester. He's a pretty popular guy.
He is a pretty popular guy, but I think this is probably the key race. If you're going to focus on one race, this is the one where, I mean, again, just to sort of zoom out for a second, mm-hmm. It's a tough map for Democrats. It's 34 seats are up. They're defending 23. They hardly have any Republican targets, right? If you go look at our map, I mean, the only two targets that the Democrats have pickup opportunities are Florida, Rick Scott, and we just had a poll come out there showing him up about 7 points, and Texas, which is another one that we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, they're sort of playing defense across the board. And in Montana, that's a state that Trump won by 17 points in 2020. He won by 100,000 votes. So 2 years earlier, John Tester beat Matt Rosendale there by 3 points. So now Trump is at the top of the ticket, which John Tester has not had him at the top of the ticket yet. So, you know, you figure Donald Trump's going to win by about the same margin, let's just say for the sake of argument. So Donald Trump's going to win, beat Joe Biden in Montana by 100,000 votes. John Tester needs half of those to mm-hmm. split their ticket, 50,000 Montanans to vote for Donald Trump for president, and then switch their vote and vote for John Tester. And the problem with that is that Republicans actually have a decent candidate in Tim Sheehy. Matt Rosendale was going to – they sort of cleared the field, pushed him out, and they got this guy. He's a Navy SEAL. He's like a fire jumper. I mean, he's like a really impressive guy. Mm-hmm. And he is much more sort of, a fit for that state.
A man from Montana.
Yeah, and I mean, again, Tester is – he's very much fit for that state. Yeah, he's got the great profile, sure. And he's got high name recognition and all that. So we'll see. It's just going to be a real uphill fight for him to get that many ticket splitters.
Another tough race with an incumbent liberal is Sherrod Brown, who is the, I think, two-term member of the Senate from Ohio. And he has a race against Mr. Marino, who recently won a hotly contested primary where Donald Trump came in and pushed him over the goal line for the primary.
Yeah, same situation here for Democrats, but with a little less magnitude, right? So this is a state Trump only won by 8 or 9 points, not 17 points. So, and Sherrod Brown is, I think, he's maybe less of an ideological fit because he's sort of an old school populist Democrat.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But he still is pretty liberal, and Ohio sort of swung to the right. But he doesn't need as many ticket splitters. I don't think Bernie Moreno is as good of a candidate as the Republicans have in Montana. So they'll be able to bloody him up a bit. And so I think, again, still a bit of an uphill battle for Democrats here, but one that I think is probably more doable than the situation in Montana.
Okay. The next state on our list is Maryland, where they haven't had a Republican for a long time, but Larry Hogan, the popular governor, he's thrown his hat, and he is the Republican candidate. But how likely is he to make it to the Senate?
Well, so this is a state that Democrats didn't have to worry about until a few weeks ago when he jumped in. And, you know, we've had two polls taken. And, again, the Democrats don't have a candidate yet. It's between Trone and also Brooks. And I think Trone is leading the primary, so he's probably the likely candidate. The last two polls, one in March, one in April, had Hogan up 1 point and 13 points. So he's leading in both polls. You can debate on exactly how much he's leading by. But again, this is the reverse situation, right? Joe Biden's going to win this state by 20 plus points. And it's like, how many of those folks are going to vote for Joe Biden and then for Larry Hogan? Now, he was a very popular. I mean, he had a 70% approval rating, which is astronomical, especially these days. So two-term governor, great name recognition, great profile in the state. So, you know, is he going to get enough ticket splitters? I think that's an uphill fight for Republicans, but again, it makes Democrats spend money and resources and time in a state that they didn't have to worry about, you know, a month ago.
I think he's going to be competitive because he looks a lot like Tom Bevin. You two guys look alike.
I will say this though, of all of the Republicans that are out there, this is probably one that if Donald Trump wins the White House, he doesn't want this guy to be his 51st vote
but
in the Senate.
But that goes in Hogan's favor. I mean, that calls for more ticket splitting because he's so well known for being anti-Trump.
Oh yeah, that's true. But he will be Trump will not do well, but Larry Hogan will do well. And I agree with Tom that if he does make it to the Senate, he's going to be a pain in the butt to President-elect Donald Trump if that happens. 1-800-723-8029. We've got one more segment, and we've got three more states to talk about. I'm Bruce Dumont. Don't go away.
I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No, thanks. I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back, and one state, actually we got two states left, but you briefly talked about West Virginia. Let's talk about Nevada. We haven't heard much about Nevada as a key. We know that it's a key race insofar as who wins the state presidentially, but what's happening in the Senate there?
Well, again, same situation. Incumbent Democrat Jackie Rosen, is slightly ahead of Sam Brown, who's the likely Republican candidate in this race. He's leading in the Republican primary by 13 points. And so she's one poll has her up only 2 points and one poll has her up 6 points. But I mean, when you look at Senate polls, right, don't just look at the spread. Look at the ballot test and the problem for Jackie Rosen. She's at 41% as an incumbent.
Yeah.
She has to get to 50. So she needs to – now – again, this far out, pollsters aren't pushing leaners all the way, but nevertheless, that's not a great number for an incumbent. You'd want to be much, much closer to 50 or over 50 to feel comfortable with where you are. And again, knowing that Trump is leading that state at the presidential level, I think is another reason that this state is a real toss-up.
Isn't that also another state where the Hispanic vote and is going to be very important, and whether or not Trump is really getting more Hispanic votes, that should be one place where it shows up if it does show up.
Absolutely. And there are a couple different demographics that folks are really focused on. You know, independents are obviously going to be crucial, as they always are. Whoever has won independence has won the election, because we're evenly divided. But certainly Hispanic voters. I mean, some of the polls show Donald Trump getting 30-35% of the Hispanic vote, even upwards of 40. If he gets anywhere near that, it's going to be a real, real problem for Democrats. African-American voters, Trump's getting anywhere from 15 up to 20% in some of these polls. Again, he only got 12% in 2020, 8% in 2016. So if he gets, you know, anywhere near 20, that would be just a huge, huge, I mean, that would be like landslide territory for Republicans. Now, I know a lot of people think that's pie in the sky, but that's what the polls are showing, or some of them anyway.
You mentioned earlier on in your list of Senate, you referenced West Virginia, where Manchin stepped down. Governor Justice, immensely popular, is now the Republican candidate. The last poll I saw, he was leading by 37%. So he is a shoo-in, and you think that's that one? And I guess I would ask you: you thought that is definitely a takeaway. That's a takeaway for the Republicans. And is there any one of these others that you'd like to gamble might be a takeaway, Tom?
For Republicans?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I think Montana's probably the one that I think is going to be I think Tester's probably the most vulnerable. Sherrod Brown is up there. And again, you look at the flip side. I'll go back to Texas, for example. You know, that's one of the only pickup opportunities for Democrats this cycle. And, you know, they got a pretty good candidate in Colin Allred. I mean, he's a, you know,
former
smart,
football player,
sharp,
right?
Attractive. Yeah, I mean, he's a stud, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, he may not have – it's not Beto mania necessarily, which is what Ted Cruz faced in 2018. But with Donald Trump at the top of the ticket, I mean, it's just going to be really, really hard. We've got three polls that have been taken in the last month, and Cruz is leading anywhere from 6 to 9 points. So it's just it's a tough road for Democrats in Texas.
One state that is not listed here, it's listed as a toss-up in the presidential race, as it generally has been. But again, not for the Senate race, and that is in Pennsylvania, where incumbent Bob Casey, who is a more moderate member of the Democratic Senate roster, he's running against McCormick, who ran last time, and he's a well-known businessman. But you don't put that one in a hotly contested race yet.
So the way that we do our Senate map is if the aggregate of polling is less than 5%, we consider it a toss-up, right? Right now, our RCP average for that race is Casey plus 5.7. So it's just out of the what we would consider a toss-up race based on the polling, which isn't to say it's not achievable for Republicans. It certainly is. It'll depend on how Donald Trump does at the top of the ticket. Yeah. But again, you go back to what I said before. Casey's average, his ballot test average, is 48.7. Now, that's a much better spot for an incumbent to be than 41, 42. He's only got to get when, you know, 1.3% of the undecideds out there, and he's reelected. So that's another reason why that is considered a lean Democrat, and that'll be a stretch for Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Unless they have a – I mean, the other thing I'll just point out is you look at this basket of Senate races, and they could all be – these eight toss-ups could all be decided by a point or two. And so in November, somebody's going to have a good night. Joe Biden and the Democrats may have a good night, and they'll win, I don't know, five of those eight, six of those eight. Mm-hmm. They will not split evenly, right? And if Donald Trump and the Republicans have a good night, they're going to win five or six of those. They could end up with 55 or 56 Senate seats when it's all said and done, depending on how the night goes.
We've got less than a minute left. On election night, do you see this as a possible landslide, or is this going to be maybe the squeakiest one in decades?
Well, I'm a pessimist about these things. I mean, I think a landslide by one side or the other would actually be good for the country, so we wouldn't have riots and lawsuits and contested. But I do think this is going to be in seven of these states. I think two or three of them are going to be in recount territory. There will be lawsuits. There will be allegations of fraud and rigging and stolen and all of that. And I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Bruno Behrendt?
Not much to say other than that.
We're going to put on the record. You said during the break that you're going to vote for Robert Kennedy.
No. I said I would love to have Robert Kennedy, like, I would love lightning to strike and just have Robert Kennedy win. Not that I think he's going to, and not that he has any of a chance, but that he would. So, because we need more monkey wrenches thrown into this system than ever before.
Okay, well, I interpreted it a different way. Tom Bevan, thank you very much for being with us. Stephanie Stressel, thank you very much. Patrick Hanley, and also Bruno Behrendt, thank you all. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for Fritz Goldman. He helped make the program possible. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.